What would a medical doctor have to say about the sufferings of Jesus on the cross and before? Welcome back to Vocal Point. This is Jerry Newcomb in a pre-recorded segment, and our guest right now is Dr. Alan Wanger, a retired professor from Duke Medical School. He's also a renowned expert on the subject of the Shroud of Turin, which he believes was the actual burial cloth of Jesus Christ. Now, we have dealt with that issue of the Shroud earlier, and so we don't want to focus on that today. Instead, what we want to do is focus on the sufferings of Jesus based not only on the Shroud, but also on the four Gospels, of course, and the testimony of ancient history. Dr. Wanger, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Jerry. It's good to be back with you. We've appreciated your long-term interest and concern with the Shroud and its message.
Sure. All right, well, let's begin in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus Christ, on the night before he was crucified, the night that he was betrayed, he was praying in the garden, and it says in the Gospel of Luke, and Luke was a doctor, I understand, that he was sweating drops like blood. Can you explain that to us from a medical perspective?
Yes, this is a rather rare condition. It's called hemohidrosis, and that is a person under extreme emotional distress may cause the breakdown of some of the capillary walls, and so the blood leaks out along into the sweat glands, and so you get a little bit of blood mixed in with the sweat, and so that it is a recognized phenomena. Just indicate an extreme stress that the individual is under.
Yes, and he prayed over and over, you know, Father, if there's any way, let this cup be removed from me. Yet not my will, but thine be done. Okay, then he is arrested, and of course there's stress involved in that. But then he has this kangaroo court of sorts, and he's beaten and spat upon, and I guess even portions of his beard were plucked out, adding to the suffering. Any comments about that suffering that occurred on Thursday night?
Yes, right. That's actually the shroud image of the face shows very clearly where part of the beard has been pulled out. It, you know, it shows, you know, somebody's print about the size of a thumb has reached into the beard and just yanked it out.
Wow.
So it's quite graphic on the shroud.
Sure. Okay, then on Friday, he's brought before Pilate, and one of the things that happens is he's flogged. Now, I know that the Gospels sometimes will just say, and he was flogged, and it leaves it there, and you don't realize the incredible suffering involved in that. And we know from Josephus and other ancient writers that the flogging was such that bits and pieces of the flesh would be torn out by these whips. So why don't you tell us about flogging?
Right. Okay, well, fine. That is that he was, scourged a little bit on the way out to the cross, but the real scourging took place in the Roman headquarters. That is a Pilate who wanted to free Jesus. He wasn't convincing he ought to die at all, but he had to try to impress the crowd with, that he would, that Jesus was, being punished adequately for claiming to be a king and son of God, so that he had his soldiers. That there were Roman soldiers called lictors, whose job it was to beat people, and so that the scourging, which we see graphically on the shroud, was obviously done by, in a sense, professionals. That is that the scourging that Jesus got was much worse than the usual scourging, which is painful enough in its own right. These Roman whips had a piece of stone or pieces of rock or something of the sort on them, which would bruise up very badly. But at the headquarters, they had a special scourge called the flagrum taxilatum, or the terrible scourge. This Roman whip had metal straps on it. They had metal dumbbells at the end of the straps, and the dumbbells had little barbs on them. Oof. So every time the individual was hit, it'd drive the barbs in, and when they pulled it back, it would tear out bits of the flesh along with it. We can tell from the shroud that Jesus was hit at least 125 times with these Roman whips.
Oh.
We can tell that there were two lictors doing this. That is that the body is rather systematically covered, literally from head to foot, with the scourge marks. It was hit at least 125 times with these Roman scourges, you know, which would be just an awful experience. And they basically what I think Pilate had in mind was turning Jesus into sort of a bloody mass, which he hoped would you know, appeal to the sympathies of the mob outside, which it did not. But anyway, this, Jesus had to undergo this terrible beating. This type of scourging would probably cause, to this degree, would probably cause a loss of about 35% of person's blood.
Oh.
You know, since it, you know, would be dripping down from all these wounds. We know that this was carefully done because they carefully avoided hitting him over the heart, which is evident on the shroud. Because if they had beat him over the heart, they could have killed him on the spot. And they didn't want to kill Jesus. They were just trying to make a, you know, a pathetic bloody mass out of him, which they certainly did.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, what about then he's blindfolded and he's hit with many blows, and they even take a staff and they use that to kind of as a, I guess, mocking him. It was as if it's a scepter, a king's scepter, but they're using that to strike him on the head. Oh, and on top of that, they put a crown of thorns on him. So describe that suffering.
Exactly. We can tell from the shroud, we can see about 40 puncture wounds over the head from the thorns on the crowns. And I say crowns because actually we have evidence from the shroud that he was crowned twice. The one, oh, there's only one recorded in Scripture, which was crowning him and mocking him as king, which was a band put around the head and thorns stuck in around it. So which was bad enough. We can there are images of the crowns on the shroud, and we can identify many of the thorns that make it up, and some of them really wicked things. They're just sharp as a needle, and you can't touch them without getting a painful puncture from it. But there's that they say there were two crowns, and so that he had his head was just covered with these marks from the thorns that would pierce his scalp. The first one was a recorded in the Scripture, was made by the soldiers. They just kind of grabbed some straw from the roadside, made it into a band, and put it on the back of his head, which was somewhat like the Roman emperor's crown. But then they stuck all the thorns and thistles down around it.
Oh.
The second crown, which we identified on the shroud, we finally figured out it's a big tiered crown. We think that this was a mock-up of the crown of the Jewish high priest, which had a tiered crown. And so we think that that was made later at the Roman headquarters when some of the Roman soldiers heard that they were crucifying this this Jew as the king. The Romans had no great love for the Jewish high priest, and we think that they thought, well, let's just go the whole way. And so they made a mock-up of the high priest crown, which would take a lot more time to make than the first one. And then they went out and put that on top of his head while he was already on the cross.
Wow.
So, these puncture wounds, it's all over the scalp, would be extraordinarily painful. And they'd probably hit him on top of it or push it down and so forth to drive the thorns and the thistles deeper into the scalp.
Well, you're not saying that they put that second crown of thorns on him while he was on the cross. This is all happening around the same time. How many puncture wounds were there on his head? Do we know, according to the shroud?
We can count about 40. There may well have been more than that because there are a couple of bands around the head which probably cover up some of the marks, and we can't see quite the whole scalp on the shroud, but of
so about at least 40
that we can see, there are about 40 puncture wounds in it.
Oh, that's awful. And the average thorn that we're talking about would be how long approximately?
Well, this period, the ones that made up the what we call the priest crown, that's what my wife Mary is my co-researcher.
Yes.
Is called the Gundilia Turniforte, and the thorns on that are several inches long.
Wow.
And they're spike leaves, and they're just needle sharp. You can't touch the thing without drawing blood.
Wow.
And so that there were, a number of these, probably 8 or 10 of these thorn heads making up the crown that were in contact with the skull.
Right.
So this was the crowns were just, just terrible pain and suffering from that.
Yes. Wow. That's unbelievable. All right, now we move on. Jesus couldn't even carry his own cross. Okay, between the brutal whipping that you described before, the flogging, and then, of course, this whole deal with the crown of thorns, plus being hit on the head over and over and over, that wouldn't help either. But he was so weak by the blood loss. By the way, is the film, The Passion of the Christ, that Mel Gibson made, is that accurate or is that overly dramatized?
It's fairly accurate. It's a little hard to I think it gives a graphic idea of what it was like.
Yes. So is that a yes?
Yes, right. I'd say that would give us a very good idea what it looked like.
Sure. All right. Now, so Jesus couldn't carry his own cross. Was that a normal thing, or was that abnormal? It sounds like it was the exception.
Right. That is that while many artistic depictions show the crucifixion of victims or Jesus carrying the whole cross, that is not what was done. That is that only the cross beam, or they call it the patibulum, was tied across their shoulders, and so the victim would carry that out to the place of crucifixion. But that was enough because the cross beam would weigh probably 80 pounds.
Wow.
And so it was quite heavy anyway. And we can tell that this is what happened to Jesus because we can identify bruise marks across the shoulders where the cross beam was carried.
I see.
And so that with his weakened condition of blood loss and the terrible beatings and everything that had gone on, he simply stumbled, and we can actually see a contusion on the knee where he apparently fell down and hit the ground with this thing on his back.
Oh.
And the scripture records that they got Simon of Cyrene to take cross over, because even while the Roman soldiers would beat him occasionally, he was obviously so fatigued that he could not carry the cross himself, so that Simon carried the cross the rest of the way to Calvary.
Now, according to Dr. Robert Buckland, who was also one who, like you, and like me, by the way, believed that the Shroud of Turin was accurate, that it was actually the authentic burial cloth of Jesus Christ, and that when he rose from the dead, somehow in that moment of the resurrection, he left the image on there, an image not made with blood, although there is the human blood to be found on the shroud in all the different marks that the Gospels describe that Jesus Christ went through, all those different areas of suffering where blood was being drawn. Anyway, Dr. Buckland said that on the Shroud of Turin, and by the way, Dr. Buckland was formerly the coroner for Los Angeles. I mean, so he's a huge, he's not a medical slouch in any way.
And I don't know.
So anyway, he said that on the shroud, you can see on the face of Jesus, or the face of the man in the shroud, that his nose was broken. And the theory, the belief is that as he fell down carrying that big cross beam, his nose got broken in that fall.
I'm having me looking directly at the face of Jesus on the shroud here. There's a depression across the right cheek, and this would indicate, well, he's certainly hit with a substantial stick, it would actually hit the nose where the bone joined the cartilage.
Oh.
So the nose was actually not broken. The cartilage was knocked loose. This is a cartilage dislocation, and the nose was actually, and since not fractured, although we can see on the shroud, it's slightly deviated toward the left side, which would indicate that it was dislocated. And this would take a rather heavy blow across here. The blow not only put a depression across the cheek and dislocated the nose, but also caused the right eye to be swollen, probably shot.
Oh, this is so awful. All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Alan Wenger, We're talking about the sufferings of Jesus Christ. Dr. Alan Wanger is a retired professor from Duke Medical School. He's also an expert on the Shroud of Turin. He and his wife, Mary, wrote a book. Go ahead and give the name of that book, and if there's a website you want to mention, then we'll get right back to the sufferings of Jesus.
All right, fine. The first book we wrote is called The Shroud of Turin, An Adventure of Discovery. My wife was the primary writer, which is fortunate. I'm a scientific writer, and this is a very readable book describing many of our findings that we've made ever since we began serious study on the Shroud in 1979. That's not in print, but if someone wants to get it, probably could get it on Amazon. We do have a website which shows a lot of our work and some of our techniques for identifying images and giving them some scientific validity so we can actually document them and so forth. This is a www. Shroud Council, all one word, shroudcouncil.org. And so that's available, and people can see a number of our findings on there.
Mm-hmm. All right. And by the way, let me use a big word here. Dr. Wanger is one of the foremost syndonologists. That's an actual word. A syndonologist is somebody who studies the Shroud of Turin, and there's an actual technical term for it. I looked up in Matthew's Gospel when it says that Joseph of Arimathea gave a linen cloth for Jesus to be wrapped in, that word is syndonos or whatever. And I thought, I've heard the term syndonologist. How many syndonologists are there in the world, about?
Serious ones, I mean, those who are, trained, highly trained in special fields, probably between 200 and 300.
Okay.
There have been many others who've kind of examined it casually. There's experts from about 67 different fields of study have looked at aspects of the Shroud, although they are probably a little hesitant to call themselves syndonologists.
Sure,
that do this very seriously and, written articles about it and so forth.
How many different fields did you say? 6 to 7 or 60 to 70?
About 67 different fields of study.
Okay. All right. So now we come to the crucifixion itself, the crucifixion of Jesus. Talk about the nails and then talk about how does a crucified man die?
All right. Well, the shroud is a graphic evidence of the crucifixion. We can see this both because we can identify where the nails went in. The nails, and the nails were put, and all the implements of the crucifixion were put inside the shroud, and they were all imaged at the moment that the image was formed. So, we can see not only the body, which is the important part, but all these other implements, including there's a very clear crucifixion nail visible on the shroud.
Okay.
It's about the size of a railroad spike, as it's about half an inch in diameter and about almost 9 inches long. So these are terrible things. But we can plainly see that the nail was put through the wrist. We can see the left wrist and can see where the nail went through. By putting the nail through a space in the wrist, what technically called space of desto, but where you can put a nail through without breaking anything.
Mm-hmm.
Many artistic depictions show the nail in the palm of the hand, but the Romans, who did thousands of crucifixions, knew that tissue in the hand is not strong enough to hold the individual up, so they either had to put the nail through the wrist or the forearm, and we can plainly see where it was put through the wrist. But that is to put it through there, terribly painful in itself, but it hits some branches of the nerve in the wrist and hand, which sends a lightning-like pain shooting up and down the arm.
Oh.
And so every time, to move a bit, it would aggravate this and send these awful pains, up the arm. And, of course, felt through much of the body, but it was just an agonizing thing. And we can see where the nails were put through the feet as well, and that would do pretty much the same thing. It would hit nerves there, and when he moved or tried to push himself up, it would aggravate those nerves, which is just terrible pain. Now, that is that the because of all the beating and blood loss and so forth, Jesus didn't survive as long as they expected. But that is that the Romans were out to make the crucifixion as agonizing and as terrible as possible. And so what they did was they can tell that they nailed the wrists about 2 feet from the center of the head. That's that they weren't outstretched like they sometimes have seen, but rather they were flexed. And because of this, the person would slump forward. This would do a couple of things. Is that it almost certainly dislocate the shoulders, which is extremely painful. And it would cause, when hanging down this way, it caused the rib cage to expand so the person can't get the breath out. And in order to breathe, the individual then has to push up a nail through the feet, which is extremely painful in itself. And, the person would soon, kind of almost faint from the pain, and they'd slump down and start suffocating again. So this form of execution, which is just terrible, was sort of a slow writhing between agonizing pain and suffocation. And since Jesus had severe blood loss anyway and been so terribly beaten ahead of time, it would be very understandable why he would it expire fairly soon.
Yes.
That is that the in other countries, the Romans would often tie the individual to the cross and just leave him there for two or three days, to die and to be eaten by the vultures or the hyenas or something. But in Israel, the Jews, custom was you had to get the victims down off the cross and in the tomb or disposed of before sundown, before the Sabbath came up. And so that the Romans would break the legs of an individual who was still alive, so he couldn't push himself up, and the individual would then suffocate in 12, 15 minutes or something.
Oh.
Jesus had already died on the cross, so they didn't have to do that. They put a spear in his side, and we can plainly see the spear wound in the side, and the blood coming out as post-mortem blood. I mean, he was obviously dead at the time this was done, but simply to make sure that Jesus was dead before they would release the body.
Okay, wait. When the spear went through, it says in the Gospel of John, water and blood came out. So what is
right.
that?
That's what happened. Is that all the beating and scourging and that sort of thing would cause fluid to accumulate around the lungs in the pleural space. And when the soldier put the spear in to hit the right side of the heart, which was their goal, because if you pierce the right side of the heart with a spear, then the person will die in 15 seconds or so. So, that makes sure they were dead. But when they put the spear in, it'd go through the lung space first where what are called pleural fluid was, which would come out. Well, that's clear fluid, and to somebody just looking on, it looked like water. It actually was not water. It was the pleural fluid, and then it hit the heart, and then the blood would flow out. So it came out, first with some of the pleural fluid, and then the blood, and then they were got mixed together somewhat, as we can see on the shroud.
Sure. All right. Now, one thing that Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard say in their book, Killing Jesus. Actually, it's not so much something they say in the book. It's more things that Bill O'Reilly has said in some of the interviews. He's implied that Jesus wouldn't have said anything from the cross because nobody could speak when they're being crucified. Now, I'm sure that the Bible's true, and I'm sure, therefore, the things that said that Jesus said, he said, but it would have been very tortured. In other words, instead of "it is finished," it would be more like "it, is finished." Maybe longer than that. But comment on that. Can a person, could Jesus have spoken things from the cross?
Yes, right. I'd say that he certainly could speak, but they have to speak in very short sentences. Because in order to breathe and in order to speak, you'd have to sort of a combination push himself up on the on the nails and the feet, pull himself up as much as he can by his arms, so then he could get a breath in and he could speak In a sense, but with that single breath, he couldn't give a long
right.
sermon or anything of the sort, but he could certainly say some of the things that are recorded in the gospel. So
sure.
I'd say that he very definitely could speak, and he spoke some of the most important things ever heard from the cross.
Now, let me ask this. Are there any records historically of other people being crucified where they were able to say a few words from the cross?
I don't recall having come across any, although I hadn't particularly looked into that. But I think that there'd be no reason that they couldn't. And to say there's many types of crucifixion with the arms just tied out to the side, there'd be no reason the person couldn't talk then.
Right, right. Okay. So, what was the cause of death?
The cause of death, I think, was multiple. That's what we can see a good bit of this from the shroud. That is that the terrible blood loss and the terrible beating and scourging that he underwent, that would certainly contribute to it. That is that the rib cage is expanded so that as he slumped down so that he would ultimately stop breathing because he couldn't get his breath out. And so that would be the combination of things. That is that the of course being who he was, he could have done differently, but he was taking his humanity and the sins of humanity on himself. And so I think he, in a sense, kind of let himself die in an appropriate time. So I think that Jesus was, submitting himself to crucifixion, and he allowed death to come at a certain time during the crucifixion also.
Now, the time of the crucifixion was from when to when?
That is, it records that they started at 9 o'clock in the morning, so he died at 3 o'clock, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So he was, since hanging on the cross for about 6 hours.
Right. Okay, and the darkness at noon, and by the way, what's fascinating is to read ancient history, and you see there are situations where non-believers feel compelled to try and explain how it was that there was darkness at noon, on that day that Jesus died. And so Celsus, for example, is Celsus, that's one of the unbelievers who put it upon himself to try and explain that away. And, of course, we believe it happened because, God the Father abandoned God the Son. And as the Scripture says, he made him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf. So all of this brutal discussion that we've been having about what happened on that original Good Friday is not, to be shocking. This is talking about our salvation and what it cost us to have our salvation. And then, of course, Jesus was vindicated in his resurrection. Any comment on that?
Exactly. That's it. And the shroud shows both the awful suffering, the death, and the image was formed at the moment of resurrection by the body disappearing with the release of vertically directed complex radiation, which left the image on the shroud. This was obviously quite deliberately done by Jesus to leave a witness for those who need some evidence of the death and resurrection of Jesus.
And I'll tell you, for those who've studied the shroud and looked into it, you don't have something so miraculous coming out of nowhere. I mean, it is absolutely amazing, especially as you pointed out earlier, that there's so many different branches of science that have studied the shroud. And in fact, isn't it true, and we'll close on this point, isn't it true that the study of the shroud hasn't even been very complete until recent times because those machines weren't even available to study it? And who knows, maybe there's more machines yet to be invented that will teach us more about the Shroud of Turin and its authenticity.
Yes, I think there's still many things to be learned about it, although the central message is apparent. It's been apparent to people through the ages, and has been the inspiration for many people, and helping to understand the presence and the gift of Christ of himself for our salvation.
Yes.
And the reality of the resurrection.
Exactly. And so with that, we'll close. Thank you, and happy Resurrection Day to you. God bless you, Dr. Wenger. Thank you so much for your research, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Sure, and happy Easter to you. Bye-bye now.